Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Ann Peterman, the Executive Director of the Global Justice Ecology Project and the Coordinator of the International Stop Genetically Engineered Trees campaign. She's been attending the UN climate conferences annually since 2004, including organizing protests and civil disobedience, several of them to protest the shutting out of the voices of communities impacted by climate change. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ann Peterman.
Thank you so much for having me.
And the talks that just concluded in Doha, the UN climate talks extending the Kyoto protocols, you were banned from this year's talks, right?
That's true, yes. We, for doing unpermitted civil disobedience the last 2 years, the UN said, well, we actually don't want you to come this year. So we got a letter from the executive secretary telling us we were not allowed to attend this year.
Well, that doesn't disqualify you from talking about it, though, surely. And I'm hoping we can do a summary of what was achieved or not achieved. And what this telling us, the UN climate talks in Doha, achieved an historic shift in principle, even though they admit that there were few genuine cuts in greenhouse gases. And they're arguing that for the first time, rich nations have to move towards compensating poor nations for losses due to climate change. Is that an achievement to your mind?
They didn't actually get an agreement on that. They agreed to talk about it some other time in the future, but they didn't really make an agreement. The U.S. led a block of developed countries in saying, no, we actually don't want to take any responsibility for the historic impacts from climate change that are causing such massive damage in the developing countries. So they didn't really get that, unfortunately.
So they're extending the Kyoto protocols to 2020, even though all the big players really aren't on board, except, you know, the EU and Australia. And the Australian government, of course, will be facing an election soon, and the Conservatives are like the American Republicans who don't believe that climate change is real. So that Australia's likely to drop out with the next government, assuming the Labor government in Australia is not re-elected. The small island nations basically are, you know, they're up against the huge big players, right? The U.S. and China and India.
Exactly. I mean, when you go to these things, you see the power imbalance, you know, not only the big countries versus the small countries, the industrialized countries versus the so-called developing countries, but also the official negotiators versus the observers, you know, the people, the groups like ours and the indigenous peoples organizations and all of these other groups who have vested interest in what's going on and have absolutely no ability to participate in the decision making.
So the final text of the agreement that was made in Doha to extend the Kyoto Protocols to 2020, the text encourages, that's the key word, encourages rich nations to mobilize up to $10 billion a year up to 2020 to help offset the effects of climate change on the poorer nations. Now, there's no way in the world that the United States is in a political position to talk about, giving money to poor nations. I mean, we're in a situation where our political authorities and our press have convinced us that we're going broke, which of course is a huge lie with this nonsense over the fiscal cliff. Give us a sense of America's position here, because it seems pretty ironic that the U.S. hasn't signed on, even though, of course, the presidents have wanted to sign on. It's largely because of the U.S. Senate has refused to go along with Kyoto from the beginning. But President Obama didn't really make an issue out of it in the campaign. But at the same time, the president, in his stimulus package, which is before part of this fiscal cliff nonsense, is in there, the $60 billion is in there because of the damage done by Hurricane Sandy to New York and New Jersey. And that's a de facto admission that climate change is real, isn't it? So how much has the U.S. been called out on this?
Oh, the U.S. gets called out every single year at these climate conventions. They are by far the number one obstruction to any positive action at these events. They're not alone by any means. They've got Canada right next to them and New Zealand and other countries that are very well known for their obstructionism. And now you have, of course, China, which has got this enormously growing economy, not wanting to jeopardize that, so that, you know, they're also causing their own set of problems. But, you know, the U.S. from the beginning has been the greatest obstacle to legally binding climate action on a global level.
So what was apparently, though, the fact that President Obama is asking Congress for $60 billion because of Hurricane Sandy was an issue at this talk, in these climate talks in Doha.
Well, sure. I mean, you've got all of these developing countries saying, hey, what about us? You know, look at what's just happened in the Philippines with the typhoon that just slammed into them. I mean, 100% damage in some regions, you know, 600 people dead, 900 people missing, and the typhoon is now getting ready to come back and hit the Philippines again. And these are countries that don't have a big coffer to be able to help the poor on the coastal regions rebuild or move inland further or whatever, the mitigation that needs to happen to avoid climate catastrophes in the future. So, yeah, these are the countries on the front lines of experiencing what's happening with climate change and have, you know, almost no resources to address it. And so they're saying, hey, you know what, the United States has the historical responsibility here. They're the ones who put the majority of the climate change gases into the atmosphere. They're the ones who should be helping mitigate the impacts that countries are now experiencing. And there's just no, as you said, there's no political will. There's no indication that that's ever going to happen.
But I guess you can't entirely blame the Obama administration in as much as one political party here, the Republicans, and they do control the House and they obstruct all progress in the Senate. They're effectively committed to denying the very existence of global warming.
Well, I can't say that Obama's, you know, really on board with the picture either, the program either. I mean, he's approved offshore drilling in the Arctic. You know, he's going crazy for fracking. I mean, you know, he's Mr. Fossil Fuel Development, and the U.S. is on track to surpass Saudi Arabia by 2020 as the world's largest oil producer. So, you know, we're not exactly moving in the right direction under the Obama administration.
Well, but is there a difference then, to your mind, between acknowledging that we have a problem and denying that we have a problem?
One would hope so. I'm just saying that it hasn't played out as far as any kind of programmatic reality under Obama at this point, even in his own, you know, what he is himself doing. He's not really actually taking it seriously.
Well, that's pretty apparent from these talks that neither the United States, China, Russia, India, you know, the only people who appear to be taking it seriously are the victims, the small island nations, and the Europeans and the Australians.
Well, and that's what's so ironic is as we see the weather intensifying. I mean, at this point, the average global temperature rise has been about 0.8 degrees Celsius. And by 2020, it's expected to have exceeded 2 degrees Celsius, which is what scientists say we have to stay under if we want to avoid total climate catastrophe. That's almost three times where we are now. And we've seen what's happened already. You know, Joplin, Missouri was wiped off the map by a tornado, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Sandy. I mean, you know, what's going to be happening next in the United States in terms of these mega storms? They're only going to be getting worse. So it's not like the United States is exempt from the impacts of climate change. And that's what I find, you know, so utterly bizarre, is that the policies coming out of government just don't even seem to care that it's even its own population that's going to be experiencing the problems from this.
Well, just in closing, Ann Peterman, What do you think can change this dynamic of denial and drill, baby, drill? To some extent, I think perhaps we know, for example, that the Koch brothers, who have been funding a lot of the global denial, and unfortunately, the press, to some extent, have been complicitous in global warming denial, because of their convention in the press of having equal and opposite arguments, and the global deniers can are making the case that they're just another argument, opposite to the scientific argument, just like the creationists are saying their argument is equal to evolution. So that seems to me to be a problem. In terms of the oil companies and the Kochs and others investing in junk science to sustain and maintain denial, you would think, for example, that the insurance companies would weigh in now because they've taken a huge hit from Hurricane Sandy. So what gives you hope?
There are more and more people taking this seriously every day. What I'm hoping is that communities can actually start getting together and figuring this out on their own, what steps need to be taken to address this, that we don't continue to wait for the politicians to figure it out. Because as you pointed out, and especially with the Citizens United decision that said that, anonymous entities can dump as much money into the elections as they want to, which, leaves it wide open for the oil companies to control the outcomes pretty much. With all of that, that we need to start looking at alternatives and how we're going to transform this dominant economic system into one that actually is responsive to reality, to what's going on in the public, what's going on in the environment. And that's where I really see hope, is this bottom-up organizing and, not worrying so much what's happening at the top, because these guys are just not going to figure it out for us. The small island nations, they're really an inspiration, looking at how hard that they've been working to try to get some kind of action to happen that can address their real problems. These countries are literally going underwater. They're already planning to move their populations elsewhere because they can't have, there's not going to be in existence for very much longer. But this is not just going to be the small island nations. This is a global phenomenon, and I really believe that globally we as people can figure it out. The Occupy movement, 99% versus the 1%. It's not even really 1%. It's like 0.1%. There's 99.9% of us out there that can figure this out. Not worry about what the 0.1% are doing, because they really don't matter in the long run.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Ann Peterman.
Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Ann Peterman, who's Executive Director of Global Justice Ecology Project and the coordinator of the International Stop Genetically Engineered Trees campaign. She's been attending the UN climate conferences since 2004, including organizing protests and civil disobedience of several of them to protest the shutting out of the voices of communities impacted by climate change. And she was, and her organization were shut out of the just concluded UN climate talks, extending the Kyoto Protocols that took place in Doha. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me and I'll answer your questions. The conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.